Hello, and thank you for joining this podcast entitled Recent SEC Enforcement, Investigation Developments in Public Finance. My name's Mark Vaca, and I'm a member in the Public and Project Finance Group at Cozen O'Connor. Our podcast will focus on two recent SEC public finance matters, which I will elaborate on shortly. I would like to begin the podcast with a few disclaimers. This podcast is for information only. It is not intended to provide legal advice. It's not to create a client-attorney relationship, and the information herein is subject to change without prior notice. This podcast is subject to copyright 2012 of Cozen O'Connor, all rights reserved. The analysis, conclusions, and/or views expressed herein do not necessarily represent the position of the law firm of Cozen O'Connor or any of its employees or the opinion of any current or former client of Cozen O'Connor. Listeners should not act or rely on information in the podcast without seeking specific legal advice from an attorney on matters which concern them. Thank you. Now let us turn our attention to our topic. The purpose of this podcast is to describe and discuss two recent SEC matters affecting public finance. One is a settlement of an enforcement action, and the other is an investigation. This podcast is intended for issuers, borrowers, and other market professionals. The following discussion is not intended to discuss the merits of any proceeding or investigation. Rather, it's meant to highlight matters that may affect issuers and borrowers and professionals, and to suggest what lessons might be learned from these matters. SEC enforcement actions and investigations can sometimes be thought of as another form of guidance, since they sometimes offer insight into the issues and concerns the SEC is focusing upon. The first SEC matter we will discuss relates to a settlement with a professional, an attorney who served as a borrower's counsel and the related borrower. Counsel Chalmery Detling II was borrower's counsel in connection with the offer and sale of industrial development revenue bonds by Raleigh County, West Virginia in 2006 to acquire a casket manufacturer from a company at which the borrower worked. The other SEC action which we will discuss, which is just an investigation at this point, relates to large local governments concerning Florida Marlins Stadium bonds, SEC file number FL-3645. This inquiry is developing now with respect to the financing of a new baseball stadium in Miami. Both the City of Miami, referred to herein as the City, and Miami-Dade County, hereafter referred to as the County, in late 2011 were served subpoenas from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The deadline for producing documents was January 6, 2012. Apart from the interesting points each of these matters raises in itself, these matters put side by side show the range of matters the SEC will address. The Chalmery Detling II settlement involved a professional and a small company, whereas the Miami Baseball Stadium inquiry involved two large local governments and possibly significant private businesses. The Detling settlement involved a relatively small bond issue. In contrast, the Miami Baseball Stadium inquiry involved multiple large bond issues. The Detling-related transactions, at least on a national level, were low profile, whereas the Miami Baseball Stadium matter has been higher profile and made its way into the popular press beyond legal and business news. The Detling settlement involved bonds that went into default. While no such default has occurred or suggested as being likely to occur in the bond issues related to the Miami Baseball Stadium inquiry, the Detling settlement involved conduit industrial development bonds, while the Miami Baseball Stadium involved governmental bonds, albeit there's a significant private party involved. And here I'm using the term governmental bonds with respect to the source of repayment. The stadium-related bonds are primarily secured by various taxes. Now let's focus on the first matter in detail. The SEC recently entered into a settlement with the borrower's counsel related to industrial development bonds in West Virginia. I'll now mention the citation for the related SEC release. It's in the matter of Chalmery Detling II Esquire, Securities Exchange Act of 1934, release number 66161, dated January 17, 2012. Again, that was release number 66161, dated January 17, 2012. On December 29, 2011, the SEC filed a complaint against the borrower's counsel in federal court, and on January 5, 2012, a final judgment was entered upon counsel's consent. The sanctions for the borrower's counsel included suspension of at least 5 years from appearing or practicing before the commission as an attorney, a permanent injunction from future violations of Section 17A of the Securities Act of 1933, Section 10B of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, and Rule 10b-5 thereunder, and an order for the borrower's counsel to pay $10,000 in disgorgement of ill-gotten gains, $3,052 in prejudgment interest, and a $25,000 civil penalty. Now I will discuss in greater detail the background and key facts related to this matter. Counsel was borrower's counsel to Charles A. Aiken and Aiken Continental, LLC, in connection with the offer and sale of industrial development revenue bonds by Raleigh County, West Virginia in 2006 to acquire a casket manufacturer from a company at which Aiken worked. In 2006, counsel also represented Mr. Aiken in a prior unrelated criminal proceeding. Although it was unrelated to the bond transactions, the criminal proceeding involved the borrower being indicted for financial fraud in late 2005, consisting of bank fraud, conspiracy to commit bank fraud, and conspiracy to commit money laundering. Borrower's counsel did not disclose to the bond working group the indictment, or that counsel was negotiating a plea agreement for Aiken. After Aiken served a 90-day incarceration and 90-day home detention in Georgia, he returned to West Virginia, but at such time the casket company was struggling, the bonds went into default, and the entire principal amount came due. Aiken's incarceration negatively affected the operation of the casket company. Borrower's counsel also did not disclose the terms of a $200,000 loan to Aiken and Aiken Continental from a company partially owned by borrower's counsel. The SEC characterized the loan as being made in order to facilitate the closing of the transaction, and the loan's terms were notable. It required a $100,000 interest payment and gave the lender a 20% equity interest in Aiken Continental if not repaid within 6 months. Thus, $300,000 was due on this loan by May of 2007. There are certain lessons or takeaways from this matter. First, proceedings not directly involving a transaction may be material. In this industrial development bond issue, the unrelated financial fraud indictment went to the creditworthiness of the borrower in a few ways, including the ability of Aiken to be physically available to run the business. Depending on the type of transaction, the business and personal history of key individuals, including prior criminal matters, particularly financial crimes, related to a borrower or its principals, require scrutiny. Now, this has to be understood in context. It was particularly relevant in this industrial development bond issue because the success of the casket business, and therefore the prospects for repayment of the bonds, depended on a key promoter. There are some other types of bond issues where one or a few natural persons may be critical for the creditworthiness of the bond issue. An example of this would be certain developer-driven special assessment and other special district-type financings. Another point, related party disclosures are important. In the debt lien matter, they went to the confidence bondholders could place in the opinion of borrower's counsel. And by confidence, we're referring, at a minimum, to the lawyer being free of any conflict of interest that may affect his ability to render an opinion in an impartial manner. Related transactions necessary for bond financing to go forward require scrutiny. The SEC, in a complaint against Aiken, emphasized the importance to bondholders of the equity contribution from Aiken because it signaled that someone other than the bondholders had, quote, skin in the game, and that the borrower had a vested interest. Again, context is important. The concept of having a vested interest would not be a concern for a large traditional governmental bond issuer, which would be expected to wish to re-enter the bond market in the future. Here, for a small company and its related principals, future market access may not be a concern and would not be the motivating factor to make sure the bonds were timely paid. Related party transactions with terms that are either not arm's length or are otherwise atypical require scrutiny. They might suggest any number of concerns, such as possible conflicts of interest or a weak credit history that prevents a borrower from obtaining market standard terms. When disclosing equity contributions or sources of funds other than bond proceeds in a plan of finance section of an offering document, it may be necessary to disclose more than the amount. In this transaction, the $200,000 was simply disclosed as, quote, equity proceeds. Now, one type of disclosure failure can lead to another's, or at least make it harder to detect others. Projected financial statements for Aiken Continental attached to the official statement were flawed because they did not incorporate the repayment of the $200,000 loan. And for context, the bond issue was $2.96 million. A general point from the Aiken transaction is the importance of due diligence, particularly with respect to a new entrant into the bond markets. While the issue of criminal history was not completely overlooked, no indication that a criminal background check or deeper inquiries were made. A consultant who assembled the financing team had an associate who, in conducting due diligence, asked Aiken if he had ever been arrested and was told about a traffic matter. This inquiry would be atypical for the vast majority of the municipal bond market, but the casket venture relied heavily on a single person. Now, while the existence of the $2,000 loan was made known to the working group, it is not clear whether the working group requested or had any access to the related loan documents. Now, see also December 29, 2011 complaint by the SEC versus Charles A. Aiken and Aiken Continental LLC in the Southern District of West Virginia, civil action number 5:11-1018. The SEC's complaint gives additional background. And now let's focus on the second matter in detail. An interesting SEC inquiry relates to the financing of the recently opened Major League Baseball Stadium in South Florida in Miami. I'll read the site now for the SEC matter. Ray, Florida Marlins Stadium Bonds, SEC file number FL-3645. Again, it's SEC file number FL-3645. Both the City of Miami and Miami-Dade County in late 2011 were served subpoenas from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, and the deadline for producing documents was January 6, 2012. Neither the Major League franchise nor Major League Baseball was served with a subpoena. The bonds related to the stadium, parking structure, or sports complex are not in payment or other default, to the best of our knowledge, and it's not apparent that there has been any harm to bondholders. Most of the bonds are primarily secured by various taxes, that is, on hotel rooms, a secondary pledge of sales tax for certain bonds, general obligation pledge for a smaller piece, and they're not sold on the credit of the baseball team. To put this in proper context, a few things about the subpoena should be mentioned. First, the subpoena cover letter noted that the investigation is a non-public, fact-finding inquiry, and that the SEC is trying to determine whether there have been any violations of the federal securities laws. The letter notes that the investigation and the subpoena do not mean that the SEC has concluded that anyone has broken the law. This transaction and inquiry has occurred within a highly charged context. There has been a previous SEC municipal securities investigation in South Florida unrelated to these bonds. The financing has been highly criticized as a, quote, giveaway to the baseball team. There's been litigation over the question as to whether a voter referendum was required for the financing plan. Part of the public controversy related to the financial status of the team, and specifically whether the team actually was making more money than was thought. The Miami Herald reported that city leaders have complained that they were, quote, hoodwinked into likely having to pay somewhere between $1 to $2 million annually to the county for taxes on a parking garage related to the stadium. The city is leasing the parking facility to the baseball team, and the county contends that due to the lease, the property is not exempt from real property taxes. And this point is likely a major point of concern to the SEC because it's an obligation on the city that could burden it in its ability to provide for debt service on its bonds. Now, subsequently, there's been legislation, law change in Florida, which has addressed this to the city's benefit in terms of property tax exemption. To put this point into context, the stadium financing plan called for the baseball team to contribute $155 million, the county to contribute $347 million, and the city to contribute $13 million. Consequently, the cumulative amount of this city obligation to pay the taxes for the parking garage would have over time amounted to more than the city's total other commitments to the project in the absence of the subsequent legislation which cure the exemption problem. Now, further evidence of the controversy is that the bond deals are considered to have contributed to the recall of the Miami-Dade County mayor. The scope of the documents to be produced and that have been produced so far pursuant to the subpoenas and the security and sources of repayments for the bonds are not closely connected. The documents requested included, among other things, documents to or from the baseball team and owner, documents to or from Major League Baseball, including, among other people, to or from the commissioner of MLB, documents relating to any agreement between the city and the baseball team relating to the parking facility built near the baseball stadium, and documents between or among the city and certain investment banks and law firms in connection with parking revenue bonds. The subpoenas further included documents concerning the team's ability to finance or contribute to the financing of a stadium, parking structure, or sports complex, the team's profitability or revenues, or the team's debt or ability to borrow, and documents concerning any payments, loans, campaign contributions, or any offers of anything of value from the team to any member of city, county, and/or state governments. The documents requested did not discuss the specific special taxes that are supporting most of the bonds for the project. There are at least three potential takeaways and significant points from the the Miami baseball inquiry that we can discern at this point. And of course, depending on the course of the inquiry and its ultimate outcome, there may be more. First, SEC investigations and enforcement actions do not require payment default or any type of default. Second, and related to the first point, the goal of protecting investors in some instances may be just one purpose of an inquiry, or may be a secondary purpose or an indirect consequence of an SEC investigation. Third, an SEC inquiry enforcement action might ultimately have as much or more to do with promoting general confidence in the municipal markets, addressing concerns of improper influence, example, addressing concerns over pay-to-play, and protecting taxpayers in the future, than with protecting investors in a particular securities offering. A review of the subpoenas is interesting in a few respects and suggests certain types of requests that may come up in other SEC inquiries. First, the breadth and detail of an SEC subpoena is notable. To illustrate, it was reported in Miami Today that the county sent about 35 boxes of documents, computerized records, and other materials to the SEC. Second, each subpoena inquired about internal legal processes related to the bond disclosure. The respective subpoenas asked for all documents containing descriptions of the city or county attorney office's responsibilities and duties regarding bonds issued by the city/county, both generally and specifically regarding certain bond issues. The municipal securities enforcement area will likely remain active in coming months and years, particularly if there are transactions that have run into problems in connection with the financial crisis beginning in 2007 and its continuing aftermath. Now that concludes our podcast. Please do not hesitate to contact us should you have any suggested topics or other comments. And I can be reached at mvacha@cozen.com. That's mvacha@cozen.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope that you'll listen to our future programs in this area.